Welcome to Revealing Men, conversations that pull back the curtain, revealing the inner lives of men. I'm Randy Flood, psychotherapist and director of the Men's Resource Center of West Michigan. I'm here today with Steve Norman, who's a life coach here at the center. He's going to talk with us today about his unique approach in working with men on relationships and recovery, particularly around communication. I've read Steve's book, and he's got a lot to say about communications with relationship with self and others and how we talk to ourselves. So let's just jump in. Thanks for being here today, Steve.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. So just say a little bit about kind of maybe a little overview of kind of your approach to communication, and then we'll kind of break it down a little bit, but just say a little bit about that.
Yeah, my overview is communication needs to start with accountability. These are my feelings. They aren't caused by you. They're not your fault. You're not to blame for them. And it's surprising how much communication goes on that way. And I think one of the statements on a practical level you might hear between couples is, I feel like you. And people think they're making a solid statement when they say, I feel. Mm-hmm. But this is a particular case of a statement that blames. I feel like you is a simile, and it usually involves an indictment or a blame on the other person. And on the other hand, a statement that would facilitate or help relationships, a statement is, when you come home 30 minutes after we talked about, I feel frustrated. So you describe the other's behavior. You don't judge it, blame it, indict the other person. And then you say your own feeling response, how you felt in relation to that behavior. And that kind of gets around the aggression and gets to more what we'd call an assertive communication model.
So in my work with men, sometimes I see them struggle with that, as you describe it, because men are oftentimes socialized to dominate in a conversation, or take charge and show that they're knowledgeable. And so I'm wondering what that's like. Have you experienced with trying to sell your approach, if you will, to a guy who maybe not seeing that as a proper way of talking? You're not establishing position or control.
Yeah, sure. It's a very difficult transition for anybody because it's a paradigm shift.
Right.
And if you're in one paradigm, the aggressive paradigm, it's really almost impossible to see or operate in the other paradigm. So the initial steps have to be based on trust, trusting the coach that here's some steps to take to do it different. And then after that kind of takes hold, the person will start emerging into the new paradigm. But it definitely is extremely challenging, and it takes time. And especially if somebody's coming from an aggressive standpoint of assessing and blaming, they're likely to be really resistant to the idea of talking about themselves in the first person.
Right.
And I think one good point to make is that when we talk about feelings, that doesn't mean a person has to tell everybody their feelings. What it means is a person has to know what their feelings are. So in a business environment, I wouldn't probably tell my boss, I feel afraid, or I feel this, or I feel that. But I might say, you put me in this new role, I feel concerned about how things might look for me in this new position.
Right.
So that word concern, so feeling doesn't mean we go around telling everybody our feelings necessarily. We do that in appropriate relationships with people we're intimate with, different levels, friendships, work, what have you.
Okay. All right. That sounds like that could be a way of someone, especially in the 21st century. I think, you're talking about the business environment, and I think that you hear about, collaboration and teams and trying to have, service economy, connection economy, and things like that. And so I think these skills that you're talking about sound to me like they would be essential to thrive and be fit in this new economy and business world.
Yeah, absolutely, because aggressive communication doesn't work anywhere,
right?
Especially if you're working with a team, and if my position is to, in clever ways, ways that are very subtle, to be assessing and blaming other people or holding them accountable for what is my part or my feelings, yeah, it doesn't work, and what you'll get with people will be polarized, there'll be maybe undercurrents of resentment and resistance. And it's just like a no-win all the way around. So
right.
Yeah, it applies absolutely everywhere.
Okay. So I think there's this like attribution where it's like if I'm feeling feelings, right, I don't want to feel, then it's like, who do I blame? And so I think that your ideas about this tendency or propensity to blame someone for how I'm feeling rather than to take it inside and say what's going on inside of me. And that must be an important part of the what you have to teach is how do you stop someone from this long-term relationship with depending on blaming.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think the kind of the key is working with somebody is not to blame them.
Yeah. You know? You're not to blame for how you blame others,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
right,
exactly, because that's a real trap. So yeah. I think the key is education. And right. As a coach would say, here's some techniques, here's some sentence structures, and look at the grammar and syntax of a sentence of proven models that would help a person communicate assertively and not aggressively. So we're kind of taking it off the person that we're coaching and saying, here's an educational piece. Look at these parts, see if they apply to you. Maybe use them, maybe not. And it really is an art because it isn't like you say, this is how it's done, because when we're talking about people's feelings and close interpersonal relationship, we have to create sentences that work for us, that not only follow the model, but work for us. So there's a real creative, artful sense to it as well.
So we talk about coaching. This is kind of a new, when I grew up, coaching, you're coaching a sport, coaching basketball or something like that, where now it's like this new nomenclature for that's different. It's different than counseling, different than psychotherapy. And so can you say a little bit about kind of this field of coaching and maybe how it's different and how it could be attractive to someone?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. I heard somebody say that psychotherapy is dealing with trauma, so maybe childhood trauma. And so coaching is not that.
Right.
And mentoring is learning from a business associate about a business. So coaching, in this case, that could be a kind of coaching, but that's something different also. And so coaching is teaching skills or passing along skills. So we're not psychoanalyzing. We're not trying to dig up your past. We're not looking for patterns. We're looking for strengths. You know, look, what has worked for you in the past? You know, most of us have had difficulties in our life or challenges one time or another. So whatever a person comes to me with in their communication, I'm going to look at what's worked for them in the past, what are their strengths. And so right. I think it's an important aspect for coaching.
So if I have a guy that's listening right now, he might, you know, it's thinking, I don't, a life coach, you know, it's like a real man is a rugged individualist. They kind of take things on their own and make it, you know, self-made man. So there's this idea that getting coaching for your golf swing or getting coaching in basketball is kind of in that masculine realm, and we can take that coaching. But I'm wondering if you have men who might be resistant to this idea of a life coach.
Yeah, sure. I think a lot of people are, and you really hit the right. nail on the head. Is if you look at Tiger Woods, for example, or other top athletes, they have a swing coach. They have like how many coaches they have, their athletic coach, their thought coach. And so it's widely accepted that if you want to be a world-class winner, you have coaches, a variety of coaches. And so I think a person just has to make that mental transition themselves and think about that and appreciate it and allow themselves to come into an environment where they feel vulnerable, feel a little nervous, but yet kind of what we call intellectual trust. Intellectually, they understand it and are willing to kind of take the step.
Are there any specific barriers that you think that could get in the way for men in particular around taking a hand with this kind of life coaching? I mean, you kind of...
Well, other than what you just described, you know, there is that this natural resistance for, I think, for all people. It isn't just men, but to be open to something, to put yourself in a position where you may not know everything, where you are vulnerable. So I think that's a natural barrier.
Yeah, there's this sometimes a lot about being a man is trying to figure out how to be invulnerable and trying to, you know, shore up and have kind of your armor on and your ammunition and stuff. And so this is a more of a way of saying, you know, like I could use a hand with some of this and it's a step into vulnerability, but there's lots of benefits from it.
Yeah, there's an organization called Mankind Project where they do an experiential weekend, and the training is to be the new warrior, and the new warrior is not the man out there spearing saber-toothed tigers and going to war. The new man is accountable. He's accountable for his feelings. He doesn't blame or hurt other people. He takes care of his family. He's able to love fully with his children and his and people he's intimate with. So that's the new model for the right. We like to think about. We're thinking about vulnerability versus somebody who's armored up.
So, I mean, I know that you call yourself a life coach, and but are there people that could benefit from coaching if they're struggling with something more specific? There's building a business, and there's maybe struggling with addiction and recovering. Is there any kind of specific coaching underneath life coaching that you can talk to us about?
Yeah, life coaching is a big umbrella, obviously. Right. So it implies a lot of things. So specifically, my focus is on helping people develop relationship skills by looking at communication models. And that also includes working with people in recovery.
Okay. So if someone's in recovery and they're wanting to work on recovery skills or relationship issues, and because I would imagine someone who has a history of addiction, that's usually a lot of losses in relationships, a lot of broken relationships, a lot of conflict because of the addiction and the consequences of it. So I would imagine a lot of repair needs to be done. So these kind of communication skills could be quite helpful in that.
Yeah, I mean, journey. If you talk to people in recovery, you kind of take even a cursory survey of that population, you're going to find a lot of people who feel really isolated in life. They feel alone, separate, different. And of course, a lot of this goes back to what you'll commonly see as this aggressive communication style of keeping their feelings hidden. And when I say keep them hidden, I think most times they're not aware of how they're doing that. It's like an automatic function. Right. The feeling never arises because there's a mechanism just below the surface that converts it to an intellectual assessment of the situation or somebody else. It shifts, it keeps that feeling suppressed. So it takes a little bit to kind of work with that, where the person actually recognizes, oh, there's a feeling. And a lot of it, finding those feelings is not so much all of a sudden the person says, oh, I feel happy or I feel joy. Is kind of looking at behavior as and be able to refer a feeling in the beginning to say, right. Okay, I got this new job and I'm supposed to start tomorrow, but I'm feeling like I don't want to go and maybe it's the wrong idea. And so the person may not say, I feel afraid, but they can infer that those are the attributes of fear. And so they could say, oh, I feel afraid just based on what kind of behavior is arising. So it's a person learning to recognize what behaviors, what things are the red flags or the green flags or whatever for what underlying feelings. And so that's a way to start back looking at feelings. And there's other techniques we can teach in coaching of how to do self-counseling and how to mind down and find a feeling. And like I say, this doesn't have to be something that person is going to necessarily share with somebody, but it gives them an understanding of what their motive is when they're communicating with somebody. So they're not unconsciously acting out of fear in a way that's aggressive, right, or something like that.
So I'm thinking of that bumper sticker I see often on these big trucks where, you know, it says no fear. And so you're talking about fear. I mean, is it unmanly to admit that you have fear, or is there something empowering about acknowledging a feeling of fear?
Well, I guess we all can recognize in our culture, I won't say in all our culture, in parts of our culture, that fear is considered unmanly. But what we know is fear is often, or anger for number one, is a secondary feeling. It can feel powerful. And right, below that often is fear. So, you know, a person may be in the habit of exhibiting or experiencing anger when underneath it is, I feel afraid.
Right.
And that can be a very vulnerable, off-putting feeling to have. And I think with a coach, it's a safe place to have that feeling and talk about and explore it.
Right. Yeah, I think the person who's trying to convince himself they have no fear is probably, you know, in my estimation, is probably drowning in fear, and it gets converted. They are not aware that they have the fear. It gets converted into anger or toughness, right, or, you know, let's get the truck higher and higher maybe.
Yeah, so absolutely. And that's the kind of thing in coaching we can look at, what's the kind of the evidence-based and some of the reasons how these things manifest, so we can take a look at them, kind of step outside of ourselves and say, oh, yeah, I am doing that, or I do have that behavior, I do have that experience, and oh, this is kind of what might be behind it, and just start kind of chipping away at prying that loose so we can become more accountable.
Right. So you talk a lot about doing this work as a way of working on relationships, and so that's another thing I want to just kind of talk about. Again, the traditional man box, you know, says that we're supposed to be independent and men don't need relationships. And so I hear you saying that these communication skills can help build relationships. And so I was wondering
Yeah, I mean, as far as the man box, all I say is, how's that working for you? You know, it's probably not. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
And, people around you, I mean, you can see where these behaviors are present because there's conflict. A person who has those behaviors has conflicted relationships. Mm-hmm. And that person will experience them with their people they're intimate with, their spouses, their loved ones, their employer. And there just seems to be a tone of blame and resentment. Or they may be quietly suffering and... they may even be passive at it, but they're not happy. And
right.
And so the man box, those things don't work. And so a person has to come to a point where they say, this isn't working.
Right.
I mean, there's no way around that. You have to come to a point where you say, this isn't working for me. I'm going to try something different. I did the experiential weekend with Mankind Project.
Right.
And it was a leap, you know. And I thought, you know, the best thing is it's really going to be add to my life in a great way. Or it won't, but it'll be a great adventure.
Right.
And just have to frame it in a way that's positive. And that's exactly what it was. It turned out being both a great adventure and a great contributor to my life. And I learned a lot.
Yeah. It's a great program. If you haven't heard about it, Mankind Project, you can find it online. But yeah, it's a great opportunity to jumpstart the men's work, as we call it. You talk about, we have been talking about more the... kind of aggressive, dominant type of style of communicating. But, you know, there's all different flavors of men. And so even on the other side of that spectrum is what I call the nice guy syndrome. And I think that these guys, you know, might be afraid of conflict and have a level of passivity and just try to be, you know, smiley and accommodating. And so I think, you know, it's not so much unlearning aggressive types of communications, but you're probably having to teach that person to figure out how to embrace conflict, see it as part of the human experience and how to navigate that and empower them and coach them in that area.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think there isn't much difference. I mean, outwardly, there's a big difference between somebody who's passive and somebody who's aggressive. But it boils down to the same thing as assertiveness. The person who's aggressive appears very assertive because they're dominant and But they're not telling us how they feel. And if you're not telling us how you feel, you're not saying who you are and you're not assertive by the definition I understand. So this person who's aggressive is not assertive and not saying I feel afraid or I feel love or I'm happy, sad, glad.
Right.
And so the person that's more passive or quieter, it's the same boat. So either way, it can dominate or can benefit from the same teaching, the same skills-based teaching. I mean, when you think of very often, you'll see people coupled an aggressive, outwardly aggressive person and a passive aggressive person is quiet. But the common theme is they're both aggressive. They're both not assertive.
Right.
So they both don't know how to hold their own boundaries. They don't know how to say, I like ketchup, not mustard. or when you do this, I feel uncomfortable. Or when you do that, I like it.
Right.
And there's a lot of ways to form sentences and to speak to people that are conducive to assertiveness and intimacy.
So yeah, I think that at the end of the day or at the end of our life, we tend to reflect in what's really important is the life we live and the relationships we have. And so not so much, you know, what our golf game was or how big our business was. And so those are things to be proud of. But this idea of having a life coach and having someone who can help improve your relationships and help improve your life is a good thing. And so if there's someone out there who's listening, who's having some doubts with our conversation, I'm just wondering if there's any words of encouragement you might have as we kind of close this down in our conversation today.
Yeah, I mean, there's absolutely nothing to lose. You know, I mean, one tool for making a decision is a cost-benefit analysis. You know, what are the costs of not changing and what are the benefits of not changing versus what are the costs of calling a life coach and what are the potential benefits? And, you know, I don't think there's anything in the negative column as far as a loss.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just a matter of taking the step.
Well, thanks, Steve, for coming here and having a conversation with us about this.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Revealing Men. If you're looking for more information about counseling, coaching, and consultative services, please visit the Men's Resource Center of West Michigan online at menscenter.org. Also, feel free to contact us on our website if you have any questions about this segment, ideas for a topic, or would like to be a guest on the Revealing Men podcast. Be well and have a great day.